Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, October 23rd, 2015, and with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. What's up, Brian?
Not much, man.
Yeah, well, we'll see if we can stir something up.
All right.
And Adam Christensen from the MacCast. How's it going, Adam?
It's going good.
Awesome. Good. I'm glad that both of you are able to find time in your Friday schedule to come hang out with me. That totally rocks. Also totally rocks that Drobo is our sponsor this week. I'll be talking about them in a few moments. But before I get to Drobo, I have a listener comment that I need to share with everyone because I'm getting called out, and rightly so. And this relates to the discussion we had, I believe it was yesterday, so Thursday, about Instagram Boomerang. And so Urkel says, sorry if this will come off more aggressive than intended, but, and just so you know, no, you do not come across aggressive. Why bring up a new product that nobody used yet just to slam it? And then he offers up some quotes to back up exactly why I needed a little smackdown. I said, Boomerang is a gimmick. I also said, I downloaded it, but was too busy to try it. Live Photos does it right. And I don't understand the appeal of a one-second video. Actually, I think Kelly said that last line. But it doesn't matter. I'm here. We'll attribute it to me. Whatever. As you know, as long as I'm taking one for the team, why not? Okay, so Urkel goes on to say, again, not to be harsh, but shouldn't you at least try the product before comparing it to the superior Apple version? And superior is in quotes. Because if you would go into this more open-minded, then it's not hard to see what Boomerang got right and what Apple might want to implement in their future updates. Take advantage of the iPhone's burst feature, clearer transitions, looping forward and backward clips, selectable keyframes, and universally shareable. And you know what, Urkel? You're totally right. And I need to really play with the app. And then if I want to talk smack about it, I can do that.
Yeah, I'm seeing you in a new light now, Jeff.
Yeah, I totally get it. I am a horrible person.
I'm all for the clearer trends. I haven't tried Boomerang yet, but I'm all for the better transitions because, you know, Live Photos are a little bit choppy.
Yeah. You know what I don't like about Live Photo is the fact that I have to have my finger on it obscuring the image to get the live bit.
Yeah, that too.
And, yep, you know, when that was being shown off in Apple's presentation, you didn't see a big finger on the screen.
No, it looked gorgeous, didn't it?
Yeah, it totally did. And you're right. We did not see fingers on the screen. I've actually started pressing and holding in the corner so that I'm obscuring as little of the image as possible.
Well, yeah, I was doing that too, but it's still, that to me seems like a design flaw.
I agree. And the fact that I'm having to, or I had to adapt and choose a place to tap so that I could see most of the image, yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, the Boomerang thing does kind of show, I think, a strategy problem that Apple is going to have with their technology, where, you know, they obviously have the ability to let other developers like Facebook add support for live photos within their systems. But why would they do that when the companies can just turn around and develop a system of their own that's already open and shareable across platforms and using standard technologies like GIF and things like that? So I think it's going to be a hard sell for Apple to go in unless there's some sort of monetary exchange to get more support on the web for live photos when everybody's probably just going, well, we could just use GIFs and we don't need to mess with
your
technology.
Apple has the benefit of having the platform, and in this case it's the hardware of the platform.
Sure.
And the, you know, the system level way of doing this. I mean, if enough people are taking live photos, making them, other companies will be on board for displaying them.
Yeah. Fair point. I'm just wondering if these other technologies come around fast enough and gain enough traction, is that going to matter to a lot of us? I mean, Facebook and Instagram are the two probably two biggest platforms that a lot of people are, you know, together sharing on. And I mean, those are both Facebook properties, right? So,
we seem to be straying dangerously far from the core thesis of the discussion, which is that Jeff's a terrible person.
Good point.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, thanks for trying to cover for me. I do appreciate that.
Anyway. I do like it when our readers hold us accountable for when we make mistakes, because goodness knows, at least I make enough mistakes.
And Brian, I have to intentionally make a mistake every now and then so that it doesn't appear that I'm above you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, man, it's so very nice of you.
I know. Anyhow, Urkel, thanks for calling me out, because you're absolutely right. So what I will do is report back with how I feel about Instagram Boomerang after I've actually used it. How's that sound?
Yeah, and we need that. We needed to start with that to avoid the hypocrisy that could happen with the next topic.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Actually, the topic after the next topic.
Oh, true.
Yeah, that's true, because the next topic, that's what I'm going to hit right now. The next topic is Drobo, our sponsor today. And I'm pretty happy that Drobo is our sponsor, because I'm actually a user of their products myself. I'm using the 5D, which connects to my computer via Thunderbolt. And thank you for calling me out earlier in the week on that, listeners. I was saying Lightning instead of Thunderbolt.
I do that all the time.
It's hard to anyhow. there are other Drobo products as well that don't have interfaces that are quite as confusing to remember what they're called, like the 5N, which connects to your network. That's what the N part means. And what happens when you get a Drobo is you get this box that has a bunch of hard drive space in it, and then you can just pop drives in as you want to create storage. And the Drobo takes all these drives and mashes them together into a RAID for you without you needing to know what that is or how to set it up. It just works. And anyhow, so the 5N, you can put that on your network and then load apps onto it so that it can do other things all by itself. And one of the apps that I think is flat out the coolest that you can put on there is Plex. So you can load up all of your photos and music and videos from TV shows and movies, and then just serve it out to all your devices as you see fit. And you don't need to have a separate computer managing all of that content, because the Drobo is doing it for you. And I just think that's really cool. And when you need more storage, you just pop extra drives in until you're out of bays. And then you can pop out smaller drives, like smaller capacity drives, and pop bigger ones in to increase your storage even more. And you do all this without shutting anything off. It's all hot swappable. And the Drobo figures out on the fly what kind of storage you have, and just knows how to use it. So popping a drive out and putting a new one in, you don't lose data. It just knows how to keep track of everything, so you don't lose anything. Totally awesome. Also totally awesome is the discount that Drobo is giving to our listeners. If you go to their website, drobostore.com, and use the discount code TMO100, you're going to get $100 off either a Drobo Mini, which is their portable Drobo system, the Drobo 4-bay, which is just the 4-bay model that connects directly to your computer, or the 5N, which is 5 bays on your network. There you go, $100 off any one of those. That's a totally awesome deal. So go check out drobostore.com, use the discount code TMO100, get yourself $100 off a really great easy to use RAID system. And Drobo, thank you so much for being our sponsor this week. That totally rocks. Okay, the other thing that I wanted to talk about, which may lead to some comments about hypocrisy, is the Steve Jobs movie. So it's been opening in limited areas over the past couple weeks, but today is Friday, October 23rd. This is the day it's officially available nationwide. And I've seen it. Adam, you have seen it. Brian, you have not. And it turns out there's a lot of people that haven't seen it that have some serious opinions about this. What do you think about that, Brian?
Well, what actually got us to this point, to talking about this in the podcast, is Walt Mossberg's review of the film, and he has seen the film, to be fair.
Yes. Yes, he has.
And he's essentially in Steve's inner circles camp. Inner circle camp, where he's saying that the film doesn't show the Steve Jobs that he knows or that he knew. And the inner circles, some of whom theoretically, well, actually, we don't know at this point if they've seen the film. They could have seen the film at this point. But they were certainly complaining about the film before they had seen it. But they're all like, what? See this guy's got it. Laureen Pal Jobs, Steve's widow, said that I'm glad you care about fact and fiction, or the difference between fact and fiction. Am I getting that quote right?
If not, it's an accurate paraphrase.
Thank you, Walt Mossberg, for caring about the difference between fact and fiction. And Walt basically proceeds to, in his review, which was published at The Verge, he proceeds to basically say that this, you know, he knew Steve for 14 years, the last 14 years of Steve's life, and the Steve that he knew is portrayed in this film, and which really shouldn't be a surprise because that's when the film stops.
Yeah, how about that?
That's when the film stops. I mean, no, you're right. In
Walt's defense, the Steve Jobs he knows isn't in that film because that's not that Steve Jobs.
Yeah, but he's implying that this is somehow the implication is that the wrong Steve Jobs was portrayed.
I think a lot of people feel that way. I mean, that's an accurate statement. I think a lot of these people that are complaining want to see the film that covers the period after this. And that will be a very different film if it ever happens or gets made. I wouldn't dispute that.
Well, I would have more. Okay, so full disclosure, there are three of us here, and one of us have not seen the movie yet, and that would be me. Mm-hmm. So I also don't. I have an opinion about the people who have an opinion about the film, and I have an opinion about the reviews I've read, but I haven't seen it yet either. And so just understand that's where I'm coming from. I would have more empathy with these complaints if people were saying this would have been a better film if the last part of Steve Jobs' life was covered.
Yeah, that's a more valid argument for those people to be making. Because to me, that seems like what they're trying to say. I mean, it's that, you know, this doesn't cover, probably you could even argue, the greater period of Apple's growth and success.
Well, not you could argue. That's just fact.
Yeah.
It stops with the release of the iMac.
Yep. Yeah. So you don't even get to the greatest, sort of what many consider the greatest period in Apple's history.
And but another thing that people are complaining about is that that the events depicted in the film aren't necessarily factually, that didn't necessarily occur in the way that they said, and in some cases involve people being in places where they would not have been, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'll take that a step farther, Brian.
Sure.
There are entire interactions that are created out of whole cloth. They never happened at all. They did not exist. People are saying things they never said. And a perfect example, there are powerful interactions between Steve Jobs and John Sculley throughout the entire movie. They never spoke after Steve Jobs was gone from Apple. But those conversations that they have in the movie are really great, and they never happened ever.
So should Aaron Sorkin have done that?
Yeah,
I suppose that is a reasonable discussion to have.
Yeah, that's a reasonable discussion to have. Now, I'm totally fine with that. I'm totally fine with the interactions between Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak that never happened, and
so was Steve Wozniak.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And but the thing is, the movie that I went and saw is not a documentary. And I was aware of that. It was a telling of a story inspired by events in Steve Jobs' life.
But one of the things that people are complaining about, I saw our very, very good friend Paul Kent commented on Facebook to this effect. I saw a couple of comments in response to Loreen Powell Jobs on Twitter to this effect too, saying that a lot of people that end up going to see this film will not understand that it's in some ways fictionalized.
Yeah. Well, people went and saw Fargo.
I'm not necessarily sympathetic to their argument, but there's a huge difference between what they were saying. Okay. Fargo said up front that it was a factual movie.
Yeah. So they set people up in that movie to think that they were seeing what amounted to a documentary.
Well, the thing on that, and maybe Brian, this is where you were going. I mean, how many films of historical nature cover events and time periods that nobody could know anything about? And we accept those things. So, you know, movies about founders of the revolution, you know, who I watched the HBO series, John Adams, and that was fabulous. But they could have never have known actual events or conversations or things that went on. But we accept those. And I think that's because there's no one around live now that could dispute any of that stuff.
And there is someone, there are most of the people involved, most of the people portrayed in this film are alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think a lot of these conversations are happening just because of that.
The reality, too, is that the founding fathers did a lot of writing about each other.
Sure.
So there was actually a lot of source material to go to for the John Adams film.
But I mean, that's basically what Sorkin has to do too, right? He has the source material. He has the people he was able to get access to and would talk to. They wanted to have Lorraine Powell involved. She didn't want to be involved
because her according to the one of the film's producers. Her premise was that you're starting with the Walter Isaacson book, therefore nothing you're doing can be good.
Which is weird because that's the book that Steve himself authorized.
Right.
That one I don't understand at all.
I find that fascinating.
And Isaacson was in the house talking to Steve and her. I mean, he was around.
But Steve didn't read the book.
No, but Steve also said, write what you want.
Yes, absolutely true. Absolutely true. I just finished Becoming Steve Jobs. We've talked about Becoming Steve Jobs several times, but I had about I think 50 pages left to go. I just finished this book, and one of the same inner circle minus Lorraine Powell Jobs has said that Becoming Steve Jobs talks more about the Steve that they knew and as opposed to the Isaacson book. Becoming Steve Jobs also shows some of the very same negative aspects of Steve Jobs' life. It just talks about him in a slightly different context and shows how they contributed to the awesome Steve Jobs that everyone knew in his comeback to Apple. I find it fascinating that they're okay with Becoming and not okay with Walter Isaacson's book. Because both of them show some very negative aspects of Steve's life. Because guess what? He had some negative aspects of his life.
Yeah.
We all do.
Yeah. We all do. And Steve, I don't want to sound too maudlin about this, but Steve being a great man, quite frankly, some of the negatives, some of the negative aspects of who he was were great.
They were requirements of what he needed to have. Those were traits he needed to have to accomplish the things that he did in many cases, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We may not like them or be happy with them, but those are realities.
Becoming Steve Jobs, this is Brent Schlinder, his book, along with Mr. Tetzley. It may well do a substantially better job of putting Steve in context, but it doesn't. I don't know. I guess I'm just going to have to repeat myself. I don't understand why these people are not okay with the negative things shown in Walter Isaacson's book, but think that becoming is all peachy keen, because they both show negative things.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
Becoming is the companion book, by the way. It contextualizes Steve. Walter Isaacson's book is the academic telling of Steve Jobs' life. And mm-hmm. Becoming Steve Jobs is the book that contextualizes everything.
I like that description, Brian.
Yeah, they go together. You got to read them both.
All right. Hey, we're pretty much out of time. So I'm going to wrap up by saying I really liked the Steve Jobs movie. I thought it was really well done. And I think it's a wonderful story. And I know I'm not watching a documentary about Steve Jobs. I'm watching a story that shows the emotional world that was all around Steve Jobs, and I'm watching characters in a story that's based on, or excuse me, inspired by, there we go, inspired by events in Steve Jobs' life. I think it's a really great story.
I think that's an accurate description. Can I say one last thing to the people who have been reading stuff, haven't seen the film, and have been hearing a lot of the negative things? Because to me, the thing that I've been fighting against is a lot of the negative comments that have been sort of floated around in the media, on social media and all that stuff. People need to go see this film. I think they're overblown. I think by the end of this film, you will have a different opinion.
Yeah, and in general, don't listen to a movie review from someone who hasn't seen the movie. It's just, you know, it's just kind of general good advice.
There you go. And Adam and I have seen it, so you can trust us.
I say form your own opinion. I mean, you may totally hate it. I don't want to hear from the people who see the film and absolutely hate it. I'm hoping to get more of those voices in the conversation. But almost everybody that I've talked to who has seen the film has come out really liking the film.
Well, all right. So I'm really curious, too. Listeners, I want to know what you think of the Steve Jobs movie. So let me know. You can leave me comments on Twitter. That would be TMO Daily. You can shoot me emails, observations@macobserver.com. And you can leave comments in the show notes. Those are all great places to get a hold of me. And let me know what you think. I really want to know. And with that, we really are out of time. So, Adam, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you for being here.
Oh, yeah.
And your opinion about the Steve Jobs movies, I'm okay with because of the way you present them. How's that sound?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And Drobo, thank you for being our sponsor this week. Head over to their website, drobostore.com, and use the discount code TMO100 to get yourself $100 off a really awesome Drobo that you can use to store all kinds of files. Listeners, thank you for being here and for giving me your feedback. We'll see everyone again next week.